annals of history, there has been some mighty duos.
Abbott and Costello.
Kirk and Spock.
Pippin and Jordan.
Mulder and Scully.
Batman and Robin.
Hawk and Keating. Well, maybe not that one.
Don't waste your time on me, son.
But you get the idea.
Now, from a small bedroom in Queanbeyan,
these two men
will try and make sense of the world with their words.
And if words fail them, there's always this.
Ben Edwards with a huge finish.
But let's hope it doesn't come to that.
The Ringer. Thanks to The Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen,
and Lang's Auto Centre in Queanbeyan.
Please welcome your hosts of the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast.
Scotty, I used to be on the Radio Masters.
And Ben, the Governor Edwards.
Welcome along, ladies and gentlemen, to the penultimate episode of the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast for 2016. I'm Scotty Masters.
I'm Benny Edwards, and sitting next to me is the freshly hair-cutted... Did I say that wrong?
Freshly shorn.
Stevie P!
Freshly trimmed, Benny.
He's not a sheep, Scotty. Freshly shorn.
He's looking good.
Although, he's always more groomed.
I will say, we have given Stevie plenty of grief this year for showing up to the podcast, you know, in a suit, a three-piece and all that.
He wanted like,
you and I are in tracksuits and stuff, yeah. And uggies. Today he's showing up in T-shirt, shorts and socks with
sandals.
No, not sandals. Thongs.
Sorry, thongs, yeah, they were, yeah.
Socks and thongs.
That's even more woggy than socks and sandals, though.
I mean,
socks
garlic?
And lechke. This is socks and thongs. Socks and pluggers.
You smell like ouzo.
There's something going on there.
The ethnic Christmas party, Benny.
Stevie Bartos.
Have a geese.
He's flying.
We need to say a big thank you to the crews at Lang's Auto and, of course, the Butcher Shop for jumping on board and helping us make this podcast. Big week, boys. Plenty on the way with the Bifurama, Benny. What do you got for us?
Sure is, mate. I've got there's a complete whitewash in the boxing world. Sad kickboxing news, actually, which I touched on last week. And there, UFC in Melbourne with Master Payos was actually there ringside.
Yeah.
So I'm going to hit you up with a few things. Macho Warrior got a bit of success. Not the Macho Warrior sitting next to me, another one.
Yeah.
And Conor McGregor's finally got stripped of his featherweight title, but that was always going to happen because I think they just wanted to give him a chance at making history, which he certainly did. But now it's time for
an old Aldo. Bloody sort of hitting both barrels, didn't
mate,
he
just, yeah. I don't know. I love most Portuguese names with a J are pronounced with a H.
Yeah.
But he's actually Jose. Not Rose, everyone calls him.
Yeah.
But he, I don't know. I love him. He's an all-time great.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He's calling McGregor a pussy, and I'm like, mate, he stretched you out in 13 seconds.
Yeah, 13 seconds. Oh, it was lucky. No,
there's
not
no
lucky.
And you look
no
at the
luck.
Last fight. Was it lucky to do that two times in a row? No, it's not. That's not luck. That's skill.
That's
man.
Exactly right. Stevie, how was meeting Mr. Buffer?
Fantastic, Scotty. Yeah. It was one of the great experiences.
I got
a solid 14 seconds with him, so really exciting.
I'm your protege, man.
Yeah.
Oh, you're looking old. I'm the next generation.
Not quite.
Look me up.
Mate, I remember my first interview on radio with someone famous, and I was like 20 at the time, was John Farnham was coming through Cooma.
On his first comeback.
It was one of those comeback tours for sure. But he came in, I'm like, oh, hello, Mr. Farnham, you know, and that's what it was like. How were you with Buff?
Really good.
Yeah,
I was just going to make a comment. You like the guy off The Simpsons? The guy who works behind the burger shop?
Squeaky voice.
Squeaky. Hey,
you're
Johnny Farnham.
You're the voice.
Yeah. It was really good, to be honest, boys. It was a real thrill for me. Maybe not so much for other people, but for
I reckon
it was
a thrill for Buff. I mean,
yeah. thank you, sir. You're so kind, Benjamin.
Just but, like, as soon as you die, I'm taking over.
Yeah, it's just to be amongst someone that you really do idolize. I mean, you obviously, Benny, you've probably got your fighters and other athletes that you look up to. But and Scotty, perhaps with music and radio. But for me, like Bruce Buffer is just one of those guys. And just to listen to him again so close was incredible. And it's just an opportune moment from where I was. I just had a chance. He went around perhaps down the back to the other toilet or something like that. And he just came back.
Can I hold it for you, sir?
I was going to say, he poked his head over the cubicle.
Let me shake it for you.
I won't tell you what happened when I followed him, but no, but I just found a moment where he just came back and I just introduced myself and just explained, like, I'm also a ring announcer in Australia and I really appreciate it if I could just get a quick photo with you and obviously looking to emulate what you've done. And he was fantastic about it.
I was going to lend you his book about a year ago.
I was, you know what? I forgot to message message you about that today. So I hope
I've got it somewhere.
Yeah, please.
But you think about that from him. I mean, he started out of nowhere. Yeah. Obviously, had a dream to do
and
that
didn't
stuff.
Even know so, Michael Buffer was his brother. Correct. Until he was like 41 or 44.
Yeah. But then, you know, 15, 20 years later, he's at the top of his game. So to have people like you, you know, aspiring ring announcers, and it'd be the same in any craft, come up and go, oh, wow, you know, you really inspire me. That makes you feel pretty bloody good.
Yeah, well, I'd like to hope so. I mean, that's
everyone block your ears. I'm moving my microphone.
I guess the thing is, Scotty, it's one of those situations where, you know, this is an industry where, for me, I guess, as a ring announcer, it is an old man's game per se.
Yep.
I mean, I started about 5-6 years ago, and I'm 30 now. So if I can achieve half of what he has by the time I get to sort of 55-60 like he is, then I think it will have been a reasonable career by that time.
You're
so
right away, mate.
And I mentioned that to him, and he was really good about it. He was so generous with his time, and no problem. And he's like, all the best, mate. I really hope all the best for you. And I would have loved to obviously have a bit more of a chat, but circumstantially, I just didn't
work out. You would
have loved
to bail him up for about 6 hours.
Oh, probably more. I would hang out with him forever if I could, but he was just brilliant. And then one thing I noticed at the end as well, he was probably a little bit keen to get out of there. He'd probably been there for five, six hours, which I am sometimes as well when you've done a really big, big, long show. It's just, you know, you want to get out of there. But he was like so generous with his time. He really stopped and took a photo with everybody, shook everybody's hand. You could tell he's just like, you know, I'm probably a little bit tired, and I'm not sure how many days he flies in from, but adjusting to all that jet lag. And he was in Brazil last week, obviously.
Constantly on the road.
Then he was back to America to do some work at home in Melbourne, back in America, and then 206 is in, I think, next week or the week after.
Yeah.
So it's just nonstop. So he was just such a gentleman. It was a real great pleasure, real thrill for me, and just to be so close to all. I was there with Big Nog as well and a few of the other guys. It was cool. Just insane. Mm. It was a great experience, mate. So.
Yeah, nice. Good stuff, mate. All right. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. Well, let's get stuck into the music and get the podcast underway.
We'll sort that out.
We got something brand new for you this week.
Barry.
This is from Taylor Hawkins. Now, if that name doesn't ring a bell, the face certainly will. Taylor Hawkins is the drummer in the Foo Fighters. So he was Alanis Morissette's drummer.
Oh, really?
And he quit.
On the Jagged Little Pill album?
He was, man.
That was the first album I ever bought.
He played on that album, and he quit that band to join the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
So he's got a tough gig because Dave Grohl's probably the best rock drummer going around at the moment, and you're his drummer. So.
What a talent Grohl he is. Eh?
Oh, and so is Taylor Hawkins.
You go from being a drummer in probably the biggest band in the world at some period in time to the
being a frontman of one of the
singer,
biggest rock
guitarist.
Bands in the world.
Yeah. What a legend.
Well, in this song, Taylor's done everything on this album. Plays guitar, plays bass, plays drums, and does vocals.
Is there a triangle section?
I'm not sure, Benny. I haven't listened. There's certainly not in this song. And this
I'm
is
available.
A cracker. This song is called Range Rover Bitch. So just check this out. It is episode 28 of the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast with Scotty, Ben and Stevie.
Yeah.
That was Range Rover Bitch by Taylor Hawkins. This is the Give Yourself an Uppercut with Scotty, Ben and Steve. And now we're going to our eye in the sky. Larry, who's over the Clyde, the mighty Clyde. For everyone in Canberra, that's the road you take down to the beach.
I think everyone knows that, don't they? The King's Highway.
Mate, I only went to the beach the first time when I was 25. Down the
what?
Clyde. Yeah, I was 25, man, 2009.
It's the first time you went to the beach. Mighty,
well, not the beach, but the first time I went like with friends down the Clyde. I went there for like Long Beach for year two camp or something.
Okay.
But I was too young to appreciate it. Which might explain my tan.
I grew up in Newcastle. I mean, we used to ride our bloody BMXs into town with a surfboard under one arm, 14.
I was going to say, Scott, you would have had that strap around your back.
Back in those days, I'd train, I'd have a fight somewhere, and I wouldn't leave Queanbo.
Well, Queanbo's got a pretty nice little river area now. They're opening that up this weekend. Have you noticed? Have you seen it?
Occasionally, about every 5 years, the river seems to come up to the main street.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be the true test for this new era. But anyway, let's cross over to Larry and see what's happening on the Clyde.
Lazza here with the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast traffic post-road special. Why do people do 80 in 100 zones and then floor it when they get to the overtaking lane? Fuck, that shits me to tears. Watch it at Pooh's Corner as there's 12 7-year-olds having a pee stop because they drank too much lemonade at the Braidwood Pie Shop. Way to go, Mum and Dad. Really heavy traffic at Batemans Bay Putt-Putt as overweight Canberra public servants pretend they're getting exercise by smashing a ball through Optimus Prime's asshole. Be mindful of the caravanners as well. You know who I mean. John and Beryl towing their $50,000 rig with their mint-condition VN Commodore that struggles to get up the mountain at 50 k's an hour. I hope you remembered to pack the Viagra, John. I'll be back next week with a thong tan and probably some sand in my crack for our special Christmas edition final traffic report. Cowabunga, dudes.
Two men, two microphones, and no idea.
When you put your hand into a bunch of goo that a moment before was your best friend's face, you know what to do.
You're listening to the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast with Scotty Masters and Ben the Governor Edwards.
Here we are on the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast. Scotty Masters, Benny Edwards and me, Stevie P. The traffic report there from Larry, the King's Highway, the famous trip there down to the coast.
And that is a trap for young players about Pooh Bear's Corner. Don't give your kids too much lemonade at Braidwood. It'll hurt you.
That's because that's where there's bodies.
Yeah.
That's the leak spot.
That's where you always see kids taking a piss at Pooh Bear's Corner.
All I associate with Braidwood is pies.
Yeah, that's right. It used to be a lot better, the pie shop.
So it's, I hear. They sold out, man.
Yeah, they did.
So I hear.
Anyway,
speaking of the King's Highway, Yass Road is one of the roads that the Canberrans take, and one of our great sponsors is on the Yass Road, Lang's
He's
Auto.
He's the Segway King,
isn't he? I couldn't have done that. I just have some obscure reference and hope you guys save it.
Lang's Auto, who will be leaving us at the end of this year. Johnny and the team have got some other things they need to do, and everything's fantastic with those boys, and we really thank them for coming on board this year. But they helped my daughter out this week. Her cruise gearbox crapped itself on Monday, so they organised a tow truck for her. They towed the car to the workshop. They gave her a courtesy car, and she got a car back today.
That is sensational.
All gearbox sorted, and that's the kind of service that everyone gets at Lang's
Auto. Everyone, not just because you're a local hero.
No, it's true. They've got courtesy cars, good so dudes. if you get your car booked in enough time, you can get a courtesy car, so you don't have to wait around. Everything you need, all your rego checks and everything, heading up to Christmas. Of course, a lot of people in Australia do the big drives up and down the seaboard. So if you are going on a cruise, make sure you get your car serviced to make sure it is safe. And Ben, I will say, Johnny said to me, he's waiting on the soccer mum van.
I just got organised a tow truck.
They're prepared for it. They said they're ready to go.
Waiting to arrive.
Ready you don't for need the to organise SMV. A tow truck. Get them to do it.
No, I will.
They'll sort it out for you. So we thank the boys at Lang's Auto for jumping on board and being sponsors of the podcast this year.
Good on you, fellas. Thank
indeed,
you.
Indeed. We will be looking for some new sponsors next year, but we'll tell you about that next week.
Thanks to Lang's Auto Centre Queanbeyan and the Butcher Shop Dixon and Kayleen. You've downloaded the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast with Scotty Masters and Ben the Governor Edwards. God bless the interwebs.
It's time for another world famous Scotty's Top 5. What are you ranting about this week, Scotty?
Well, lads, this time of year you see Santa everywhere, and we all know the story. They're not the real Santa, but they are one of Santa's legit helpers that you see in all the shopping centres. You know,
are they?
Yeah, they're Santa's helpers. So what they do, they talk to the boys and girls. The boys and girls tell them what they want for Christmas. Then they relay that to the real Santa. The Santa at the North Bowl.
You only get stuff if you've been good.
That's right. Yeah, well, the big Santa's the one that makes the call on that. I don't think Santa's helpers can make the call on that. But given Santa can't personally, you know, vet every single Santa's helper, you know there's got to be a few bad apples, like Billy Bob Thornton, who yes. sneak in and get a gig at a local mall or a school fete, you know? And it's going to happen. But never fear, Santa, I've got your back. It's time for this.
And now, it's another Give Yourself an Uppercut Top 5.
Yeah, it's the top 5 signs you've hired a bad department store Santa. So any shopping
this is
centre...
This getting me good, Benny.
Any shopping centre managers listening in, if any of these ring true for you, hire someone else. Ben's looking for a gig at the moment during daylight hours.
I just got to bleach my beard white on him.
You'll be fine, man. You'll be fine.
I was going to say, he's working towards it.
Number 5, tell sales girls at David Jones that me and Mrs. Claus, we got an understanding. Number 4, after every toy request, he just says, yeah, right, kid. It's not what you want to hear,
maybe,
is it,
maybe
as a kid?
My dad's Santa.
What was that?
Oh, maybe my Santa. Dad's Santa.
Can I have this? Yeah, no.
Number 3 in the top 5 signs you've hired a bad department store Santa, tries unsuccessfully to hide the fact that he's wearing handcuffs.
I'll let my kids sit on his lap.
Number 2, keep sending elves out for more JD and Winnie Reds.
Not that'll a good put some sign. Hair in your ass.
Definitely, that's why the beard's white. And number 1, there's the drum roll. In the top 5 signs you've hired a bad department store Santa, keeps reminiscing about being deputy leader of the Labor Party till she stabbed Big Kev in the back and then got the top job. Poor Julia.
Oh, dear.
You're listening to the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast. Thanks to The Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen, and Lang's Auto Centre, Queanbeyan. He's put more people to sleep in the ring than you've had hot dinners. He's faced the biggest and meanest dudes on the planet.
Another dramatic finish here as Ben Edwards comes from behind. Wow!
So now it's time for Ben's Biff-a-rama.
That's insane in the membrane.
And here we go for the second last Biff-a-rama for 2016. Benny, take it away.
Well, let's start off in our... pretty much our own backyard, the Ultimate Fight Night 101 down in Melbourne. It's the second time the UFC came to Melbourne, with the first one famously being the Ronda Rousey Holly Holm.
Yeah.
Huge event that was. So after like 5 changes on the card, they finally locked in the main event between Kiwi-born Aussie Robert Whittaker versus the American Derek Brunson. Now, both guys going into the fight were on a 5-fight win streak. It only went for 4 minutes and 7 seconds. But
it was full on, wasn't
they
it?
They packed an awful lot of entertainment into that time. Full back and forth, home run derby. Both guys just looking for the bomb. They both rocked each other several times, with Whittaker finally getting the TKO right at the end of the first round and earning himself 2 performance of the night bonuses, which is $100,000 on top of his purse, which would have included a win bonus as well. So
that's awesome.
Very good night for Robert Whittaker. And good for him, mate. He only started fighting in 2009. He's been doing Muay Thai with one of my coaches at Bulldog Gym in Castle Hill, Stewie McKinnon. Does privates with him.
Yep.
And you could really see how much he's improved the last couple of years.
Yeah,
and another guy stopped cutting weight, went up a weight division, and has been f***ing killing everyone.
Yeah.
Get the beep button ready. Just another example of just come in fit, strong, healthy, don't dehydrate yourself, and the results speak for themselves. So now he's won 6 in a row, and he's ranked number 7. He's knocking on the door of a title shot, and he's him. In I think I send you his post-fight interview, so have a bit of a listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, referee Herb Dean has called a stop to this contest at 4 minutes, 7 seconds of the very first round, declaring the winner by TKO, Robert the Reaper Whittaker.
Have you heard a better sound in your life than this adoring crowd responding to your performance tonight? The Rod Laver belongs to you tonight. Robert Whittaker, congrats on the biggest win of your young career.
Thank you very much. thanks, guys. You know, me and my coaching staff got together and we had a solid game plan, and we knew it was going to come out tough, but I had no idea it was going to come out that hard. I knew I had to weather the storm. He's a heavy hitter. I tried to duck and weave as much as I could, but you know, I stuck to the game plan. I stuck to my setup. I ended up breaking out, circling out, and working to his weakness.
We're going to take a look at your handiwork as we get the replay ready. It sounds like this was the fight you expected. If you can handle the early flurry and get your hands and your feet on him, that you could put him out and train for a hard five-rounder, got him out of there in round one.
100%. You know, he hits hard, very hard. You know, his other opponents would, you know, testify that. But I hit hard too. I'm just as fast and I'm just as strong. And if you come at me with holes in your plan, I'm going to take it from you.
Good interview too. He's post-fight. He was good.
Yeah, mate. He's a good bloke, mate. He's only a young fella. He's just a young, hard-working
mate,
family
him
man,
Bisping makes sense. Sorry. I mean, I know you're going into it.
Yeah, well, I think Bisping and Romero.
Are we back into it here or are we just talking shit?
No, we're into it. Shit.
I was into it.
I thought so.
Back on the other.
Leave it in.
Yeah.
No. So, yeah, well, they're looking at, obviously, Romero is the number one in Bisping, but I don't think the UFC want
Thank
Romero
you,
as a champion.
Don't even
mate.
Need to say
I think Whittaker is just a hard-working family man. Romero is a dirty drug cheat who doesn't speak English and preaches about Jesus at every opportunity while he's sticking a needle in his ass. But anyway, what do you think of the main event, Steve? You
fantastic.
Were there, mate.
Yeah, it was absolutely
Did
amazing.
Did you get any blood on you?
No, not quite. I wasn't close enough for that. But I tell you what, in terms of just a sheer fight where you could tell both guys went at it and banged, it was unbelievable.
Oh, cooling
yeah,
in
they
period,
bought it.
As,
they
as you said, it was two Mack trucks going head on at each other, and the crowd that they picked a much better venue this time. Last year, UFC 193, Rousey and Home, Etihad Stadium.
Yeah, Rod Laver this time.
Yep, Rod Laver this time. So the Etihad Stadium, obviously, to get the fans in, to get the numbers up and break the record as they did and all that sort of stuff. Still a great show, don't get me wrong.
Yep.
But this time, Rod Laver, roof closed, you know, everybody in that early afternoon. They had a couple. But
not as big,
that's
so you're
it,
a bit
that's
closer.
It. Everyone not maggot, you know, just had a big
so
night.
So about 20,000?
20,000, but they'd had a few beers. Everyone was just in the mood and the atmosphere was electric. I mean, I've seen some big shows where you've won, Benny, and they've been really good too. But this was just...
That was about 800 people.
Yeah.
but Same this, thing.
But the noise was just incredible. Like, it was really good, and it was a testament. I mean, he was rocked early, Whittaker. I thought after about 40 seconds he was done.
He was doing the chicken dance there for a bit, but came on strong and recovered well. That's pure fitness and heart.
It's got to be, doesn't it? He shook it off, and then from there he threw some bombs. I think it was about 140 in that first round. He started throwing those bombs, connected, and then he sensed it. The crowd got behind him. Yeah, a great win.
That gives you energy, something.
Fierce, I bet. I thought his ref probably let it go a little bit long. I thought he had him at one point about 20 seconds before that where it was all over. But, I mean, fair enough. Heard Dean let it go a little bit longer.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was
a good stoppage,
And
how much does everyone just love Herb Dean?
They do.
Every ref on the day was just like, whatever.
One of the refs got booed. Did you see that, Scotty? He came out and he's sort of like, oh, I don't know. And he like shrugged.
Was it Mazagaki or whatever?
No,
everyone ate.
It wasn't Steve-O.
Dana throws him under the bus every time.
Yeah, I think
he shouldn't even be allowed to watch fucking fights.
I'm not sure who it was. I think it was just one of. Could have been how they get local judges and sometimes as well. And he's looked down at.
I think they were local judges because I'd never seen them on a card before.
And he looked down at John Anik and he's just like, I don't know.
Yeah, but
they'd be from like the Melbourne or
probably
Commission or something.
The Victorian Athletic Commission. And the minute they announced Herb Dean, the place went ape shit.
Everyone loves
Herb Dean.
When he actually gets underway, your reverie.
He's not a bad fighter in his own right.
That's probably why he's got the respect.
Well, from one
Macca warrior just talking to another one on the undercard was Alexander Volkanovski, who's been petitioning on Facebook.
So Aussie. When he apologised halfway through the fight for having his hand on the ring.
Sorry, mate.
Nearly ended up in a leg lock.
What a legend. Did you see that when you were there?
No, not when I was there. No, because I was on the other side of the cage.
Yeah,
but
hold the cage. Oh, sorry, mate. Oh,
sorry, mate. Leg lock.
What a legend, eh? And, mate, he'd been petitioning on Facebook for at least the last 12 months to try and get in there. Going into the last fight, he'd won 13 out of his last 14 fights.
Mm-hmm.
He got the TKO in the second round. Total domination performance.
It was.
He fought at the end of the fight, the Japanese guy was trying for a knee bar and, like, Florence and the Machine never let me go. he should have bloody let it go because Alex was just dropping bombs on him. And as I always say, even if you find a good grappler, a black belt goes to a white belt pretty bloody quick when you're getting punched in
the face.
Yeah. And Alex, the Hulk, as he goes by, he's the smallest guy in the lightweight division. Yeah. And, I mean, he's one of the smaller guys in the featherweight division, 10 pounds south as well.
Yeah.
He's only 5'5", and he's in great shape. So we might be seeing him drop down a weight division.
To bantamweight.
And, well, he asked.
No, drop down to feather.
He did say bantamweight, though. He mentioned bantamweight.
In the post-match, I mean, he probably could make it. Yeah. But, you know, my opinion's on weight cutting.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Just drop down to featherweight. I reckon he's going to tear it up, mate. Yeah. He's got a... What do you reckon, Steve-O?
Yeah, absolutely. He was really clinical, I felt. And you know how you're talking about how he was going for that leg lock against him. What you could see is that maybe it was just because... And you'd be able to comment more on this than me, but maybe due to his nimbleness and size and his agility, he was able to get overhand elbows on him and just connect. And you could hear them.
Bang. And his head was on the ground. So all that energy's gone
straight into him. So, I mean... A bigger guy probably isn't able to get down and over the way he did, but he connected so many flush times and he looked fit too. So for me, that's exactly what you need if you're going to make it in the big time. And he did mention in the post-fight interview, he said, you know, I'm one of the best guys at featherweight, at bantamweight, you know. He goes, he did put it out there to say, look, it's not up to me. I'll fight wherever you tell me to fight. But he looks like he's got the potential to drop down, provided he can keep lean like that. But he did look very lean at what he fought.
And
at,
I think with his high energy style as well, if he was to drop down, he'd really have to do it properly and slowly and that. Yeah. But awesome. Man, Aussie MMA is looking up.
And he could have crumbled under the pressure too. Oh, like he'd been at him for a year and finally got his shot.
Yeah,
and he could have crumbled. But
and
he
was fighting no bum as well, man. Mm. Yeah. But
I think it's one of those situations as well where if you're going to call them out the way you did, you've got to perform.
Yeah, correct.
And if you do the way he did, well, he's in everyone's face now. He's backed at what he's come out and said. And so now he's in.
But he was never disrespectful at all. He was just like, mate, give me a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give me a bloody shot.
Yeah.
And great bloke, man. So finally, onto the MMA news. McGregor's finally been stripped of the featherweight title, as I touched on in the intro. It was always going to happen. He hasn't defended it since December in his 13-second start against Jose Aldo. And the UFC was always going to let him hang on to it just to give him a shot at history, which he certainly made. So, but talking to his, talking to his coach, but I saw his coach interviewed, and he said, mate, as I think I touched on this a week or two ago, he's actually at a lower weight than what he normally is when he's cutting weight for a featherweight fight like 3 weeks out.
Yeah.
So featherweight is still an option. And as McGregor always says, options are a very good
thing. I'd love to see him go back and knock Jose out again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just to prove a point, Scotty.
I feel bad saying that, putting shit on Jose, because he's such a legend. He's always been so respectful of everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a humble champion, family man. Came from nothing. You know,
is it 10 months, Benny? Is the rule 10 months you have to defend it in that time?
I think it's actually up to the UFC. I think it's at their discretion.
Okay.
In boxing, it's like every 6 months they can strip you.
So maybe behind the scenes then he sat down and they said, look, this is our options for you. Do you want to defend that featherweight?
And
he's probably gone, nah, bugger it. I can get a bigger money fight. But I think Al versus Aldo 2 would be big.
That'd
sell massively.
Imagine if he went back down and got the belt again.
Again.
He's already...
That's a good selling point, Scotty. Imagine he's stripped of it now. He's the lightweight
champ. To go back to get the belt he never lost.
He goes back and then beats Aldo again and then reclaims that double. That'd be good for you.
Mate, if anyone can do it, it's Conor, man.
Yeah. Then I'll strip him of the lightweight. Then he can go up and take on Eddie again. Keep doing that.
Mate, the world's his oyster, mate. He's only just turned 28 years old as well.
Yeah.
And he hasn't really taken a lot of damage. That's why the Nate Diaz fight. And even then. Because he wasn't cutting weight for it. I guarantee you he recovered really well from that one. So moving on to some kickboxing news. Last week, I touched on the missing former Glory welterweight champion Mark de Bont being missing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's confirmed he has passed away, and his body was found in the river where his car was discovered. But it was 20 days after he was announced missing, and they'd actually already searched the river. There's been no more news as of yet, but by all accounts and from my brief interactions with him when we shared a change room, when the night he actually won the welterweight title, absolute sweetheart of a guy.
Yep.
So, rest in peace, Mark de Bont, mate. Wow. So, moving on to some more positive news. I've covered it pretty extensively in the last couple of weeks. The biggest kickboxing fight, definitely in the last 10, 15 years, arguably ever, given the current climate of the kickboxing world. Joe Rogan, my podspiration, he actually spoke about the upcoming fight between the bad boy and it's the bad guy versus the good guy. Rico, clean cut, hardworking family man, Barter,
wanker,
the crazy, the naturally talented. Yeah. Kill or be killed. Oh, it's just the technician versus the murderer. It's so many contrast. It's just an awesome matchup. Here's Joe Rowe talking about it with former It's Showtime commentator and my good friend Vinny Shorman.
I'm obviously a big fan of kickboxing, and I'm super psyched that Glory is going to put on Badr Hari versus Rico Verhoeven if Badr Hari gets out of jail.
Yeah, no, he's not in jail. He's not in jail. He's
not
out.
Right now.
He's out. No, he's not
right now. No. But this is a long time between now and December.
Well, we'll see. Who do you think? Who would
pick? He makes John Jones look like a fucking choir boy.
I know, true.
Doesn't he?
Yeah, well, yeah. who would you say?
Well, it's an interesting fight. I mean, for sure, Badr can win. For sure, Rico can win. Rico's been much more active. Mm-hmm. Rico has incredible cardio. If you go to the Badr Hari that beat Alistair Overeem in the rematch, you know, you go to that Badr, you know, the Badr who was in his peak.
Yeah.
I mean, Badr was a monster.
Yeah.
But it's been a long time, and he's not been very active over the last few years. And
it's which Badr that turns up, isn't it?
What's that?
It's which Badr turns up.
It's which Badr turns up, but it's also, like, all of the legal issues that he's gone through, all the behavioral issues. I mean, he's had a lot of problems. Mm. Allegedly broke some guy's leg in a nightclub. They say he held the guy down, stomped his shin, and smashed his leg. That's crazy shit, man. And who knows? Who knows? Who knows what the fuck is going on with that dude?
Yeah, Rico's... I know his mum and dad, and they're real nice people. He's a nice guy and stuff. But, you know, Badr's probably the most exciting heavyweight ever.
He's a wild man. He's a fucking wild man. And he's legit knockout power. And the other thing is, he throws caution literally to the wind.
Yeah.
I mean, he unloads with full power shots, wades forward, throws bombs. Like, he throws out all ideas of, like, being technical and being being really cautious and you know, like, setting traps. Mm. He's not setting traps.
No.
He's dropping missiles on you.
I mean, it gets to him, I think. I've heard that he throws up. I think he gets that nervous that he throws up.
Throws up before the fight.
Yeah, he gets really sort of super nervous.
Makes sense if you see the way he fights.
Yeah.
He fights like it's fucking chaos.
He fights like someone's nicked something off him, doesn't he? You know what I mean?
Well, someone killed somebody he loves. That's what he fights like. He fights like a wild man. But it's so exciting. But Rico's a different kind of fighter. Rico is a very athletic, big heavyweight who has amazing cardio, outstanding technique.
Yeah,
his boxing's outstanding. His kickboxing's outstanding.
Have you ever seen him?
Huge guy. He's a natural 250 plus, and he's in incredible shape.
Yeah,
there's Badr. The thing about this is the Glory preview video.
Yeah, it's just the highlights of
they're
us,
putting
yeah,
on.
I'm pretty sure.
The thing about Rico is that Rico's been super active while Badr's been dealing with all these problems, and Rico's been getting better and. Rico's been beating guys that, you know, he had some problems with some guys in the past, and you see him now, and he's just a much better fighter in every shape or form.
Yeah, when he fought Benjamin Adebuyi, I thought that was brilliant. I mean, he was sparring with Tyson Fury, wasn't he? And, and all decent heavyweights, and beating Daniel Gita, who's...
The Daniel Gita fight's a good example, because they had fought before, and it was a very close fight, but in the rematch, it was not close at all. Rico kind of ran away with it. Rico's on another level right now.
Yeah.
But the thing about Badr is, like, when he was at his best, and you kind of got to assume that it's possible that he could go back to how he was when he was at his best. When Badr was at his best, he was a fucking hurricane in there.
He was. I remember I've seen him because he fought a lot on It's Showtime, and the Moroccans absolutely love him. But a bit like Jiraiya.
Yeah.
Mohamed Jiraiya is coming through now, and Ilias Belaid, they love them.
Who was it that he stomped in the head? Remy Bonjasky.
And Hestey Gurgis.
Yeah,
he booted Hestey Gurgis when he was on the floor.
Yeah, he got disqualified for that one, right?
Yeah, he got disqualified for both of them.
Both of them, Bonjasky too.
So, yeah, you can hear it there. Badr's got a bit of a checkered past. They touched
just,
on it there.
Just a little.
He's a maniac, and, mate, we'll be watching that.
Yeah.
1,000%.
When is that, Benny? It's not far
December
away.
December 10.
It is, yeah.
December 10, mate. So that's going to be a cracker.
That's going to be brilliant, mate.
And finally,
I'll be at Keith Urban live stream it for me.
Yeah. I'll live stream it off my flip phone.
Yeah, nice. Very nice.
So finally, onto some boxing news. We had Vasyl Lomachenko versus Nicholas Walters for the WBO featherweight strap at 60 kegs. Now, Lomachenko, his professional record is 7-1. But he had like 3 or 5 million, something like a million amateur fights. He's arguably the best amateur ever. And his one pro loss was to the hard-headed Mexican Orlando Salido because he went for a record, for a title shot in a record time of only his second fight.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay.
And as I always say, the amateur and pro boxing is very different. It's actually a lot more similar now because they changed the rules 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But when he went for this, it was very different.
Yeah.
This time, he was coming up against multiple-time WBA featherweight champion Walters, who was undefeated in 27 fights going into this and a clear top 10 on the pound-for-pound list. Outside of a couple of body shots, Walters couldn't touch Lomachenko. Mm-hmm. There's a thing on Facebook keeps popping up on him. It's called the glitch in the matrix.
Matrix, yeah.
And it's a perfect way to describe him. It's absolute virtuoso performance with Walters actually quitting on his stool after the seventh round. And he blames inactivity on his poor performance, where everyone else that watched the fight blames running into arguably the pound for pound number one in boxing right now.
Yeah,
He lost a lot of fans by quitting on the stool. Well, he wasn't even hurt. Like Lomachenko, Walters was just punching air. Lomachenko was just touching him up. Well, I wasn't really hurting him.
Yep.
But it was just like fighting a ghost, man. He's just punching air. Mm. Here's Lomachenko talking about the fight.
Wow. That was impressive stuff. You just made an undefeated top fighter in the weight division quit. He literally said, no mas. How did you do it?
Man, the boy. Вы только что сделали так, что человек, который ни разу не проиграл, сказал, больше не могу. Как вы сделали?
Я не знаю, я снимаю шляпу перед Волдосом. Он действительно очень сильный боец, крепкий. Но я думаю, что дело сделало простой год. Он год стоял, не боксировал. Я думаю, что из-за этого он остановился.
Walters is a good fighter, he's really strong. But I think he just stood there in one place, which made it easy for me to win.
Walters is a good fighter, and he is strong. Gary Russell Jr. is a really good fighter, and he's really fast. And these guys have no chance against you. What's the goal here for you, quickly, before we turn to the Axemen? What's the goal for you? What do you want to accomplish in boxing?
My goal is boxing.
Моя цель в боксе стать номер один pound for pound.
My goal is to be number one pound for pound.
So you can hear it there. He's really looking to work his way up the pound-for-pound mm-hmm. rankings. And, mate, there's an argument for him being the number one now. Just how he's outclassing guys like Walters. Walters is a murderer, mate. Walters is, like, freaking killed Nonito Donaire, killed Aussie Armenian Vic Darchinian. The guy is a top-notch fighter.
Yep.
And and technically, he was punching air, mate.
What about Lomachenko over Triple G?
Too small.
Yeah?
Yeah, way too small.
I don't mean... I mean for pound-for-pound.
Oh, you can't take away from what... Triple G's done to have the highest KO ratio at middleweight and to fight the top guys. But, mate, Lomachenko's in the mix just the way he's totally dismantling people. And outclassing them with boxing skill. And I'm saying Gennady doesn't have it, but Gennady does get hit.
Brute force.
Bernardi's just iron chin,
yep.
massive punches, and a consummate professional. Lomachenko, he doesn't get hit. Angles are just the best I've ever seen.
He's well and truly in that pound-for-pound argument. That was the point I wanted to make. For all our listeners out there, can you just explain how that sort of criteria works, Benny? I mean, Ward was in that argument last week as well after that win as well. But, you know, exactly what, just for the non-boxing fan, because it's an unofficial title, pound for pound. Our Money Mayweather was that guy done for media. A long time. Yeah. So, yeah, is it just like a hypothetical thing that the media will say this guy is pound for pound because of X, Y, and Z? Like what?
Well, most of the time, the pound for pound title is the most dominant guy in his weight division. Just say, like, we'll use Gennady as an example. Gennady has destroyed pretty much everyone, with the exception of Canelo, because Canelo doesn't want to step up three kilos and fight him. But the way Gennady has totally dominated everyone in the middleweight division by knockout, he's got a 90% KO ratio. The guy's a middleweight, and he's a freak of nature. The way he's actually dominated, how far he is ahead of everyone else in his weight division compared to other weight division, that puts him a cut above, and that's where the pound-for-pound argument comes into it. It's always subjective. Yeah. There's always going to be arguments, but... See, like, Gennady and Lomachenko are a good example. Gennady is just dominated. He's knocking out everyone. But Lomachenko, he's winning, but he's using better boxing skill and he's not getting hit. So it just depends what you're looking for. At the moment, I would have to give the edge to Gennady. So he's just defended his title with an iron fist, literally.
Yeah.
But, mate, Lomachenko, it's just how far ahead you are of everyone else in your weight division.
And that's the thing. How can you argue with that based on Gennady? I think it's a case of where... you know, that it's called an argument for a reason. Like, you know, there's an argument for him to be pound for pound king. Well, I think that's the beauty of having this hypothetical title, is you can debate it to death, but there's nothing officially that will say that. How can you take anything away from GGG, as you say, Benny?
Yeah, I mean, you can't.
This is a guy who's knocked out everyone. That last fight where he just came forward, he got hit, you know, he got hit by...
But that's part of the excitement.
He got hit a few times, but then he just absolutely... But when he wanted to finish it, he did.
And I also think that him getting hit is also part of the reason why he's such a big banger, because he plants his feet to give himself a good foundation to let off heavy shots.
Mm.
Whereas Lomachenko is always on the move. He's not really going to kill you with one shot, but he's so much harder to hit. But Gennady's there. He does get hit, but he's got an iron chin, and he doesn't mind getting hit to keep position to knock you out. That's why there's always going to be an argument. Depends what you're looking for.
That reminds me of just, you know, the pressure of, you know, I'm trying to think of like a team sport analogy, for example, but just someone that is just pressuring you all the time. Like, so just, I don't know, just say in any ball sport, the other team's got 70, 80% possession. Yeah. You're just under constant pressure against Triple G.
He's in your face. You can hit him and doesn't do nothing.
But remember that last fight? He was getting hit in that second round. Who was his last opponent, man? It's just...
Kell Brook, wasn't it?
Yeah, Kell Brook. He broke his eye socket.
That's it. That's the one. Thank you. So it just slipped my memory there, excuse me. But remember Kell Brook in the second and third actually came forward, won those rounds, and was actually looking good and hitting him. And GGG scoring was points. Just smiling at him, walking forward, going, hey, yeah, no worries. He's got a chin. Thanks for that.
I like. Plant.
Bang. Plant. Bang. Cop a couple.
My sister. Bang. She get this.
No.
She's number one whore in village.
Yeah.
I didn't say that, Gennady.
But yeah, it's a great argument. I mean, that's the beauty of it. It's a great argument, but it's hard to take anything away from him.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely, nice. Mate. And that's nice. That's a wrap of Biffarama this week.
It was a cracker.
It's always a cracker, man.
One to go.
Scotty had to stop the recording then because I told him I was finished. When I wasn't actually finished, I got one more story.
Excellent.
Man.
I've heard that's a problem for you.
What?
Saying you're done when you're not.
Well, usually I'm done pretty quick. So finally... I don't know how to segue out of this one.
You've got 2 minutes to go, don't worry.
Hey, what is it they say? Any more than 2 minutes, you're doing it for the chick.
That's right, yeah.
Jesus. So let's segue into this. Aussie heavyweight Lucas Brown has failed his second drug test in 8 months. The first time being for clenbuterol when he fought overseas. And this time it was for a drug called Ostinine. I believe that's how it's pronounced. After... volunteering himself for the VADA, VADA, acronym, yeah. Voluntary Anti-Doping Association. He volunteered for the random testing program. That drug is actually used for muscle wastage in hospitals and works very similar to anabolic steroids, hence the reason it's banned.
Yeah, right.
Now, Lucas is claiming it's tainted sups, but you know, if you're like a real professional, I always use Mighty Mouse, Demetrius Johnson, as an example. Mm. He goes, I don't know what I'm eating in a supplement, so I just eat food. That's the only way to be completely safe. But all the supplements that are illegal and do contain things that will make you pop for a drug test, we're in the information age. Like, it's all on the USADA website. They've got it all on there. You know what you can take, what you can't take. So if that's what's happened, that's totally on Lucas. That falls on him completely. And obviously his fight with Shannon Briggs is on the back burner, but... Just say it was a legal supplement that was actually tainted. That would be extremely bad luck, but also highly unlikely. So I'm not gonna speculate until I have more information.
Mm.
But failing two drug tests in 8 months.
Two drug tests that he's put his hand up for and failed both.
Like, I can see the clenbuterol argument with beef in that part of the world, of Russia. Where was it? Dirkistan. Chechen Republic.
Anything west of Dubbo is Dirkistan to me.
Like, I can see the argument for that. Yeah, like, it's no secret. They do put clenbuterol on cows. Beef the night before. I discussed that in depth. But, who knows about this?
He's either the most unlucky professional athlete or the dumbest professional athlete.
I don't know what's going on, man. Because, I don't know if he actually got money for his world title. Like, he won the world title.
Is he still with Ricky Hatton?
Still managed by Hatton Promotions. Okay. They're doing everything they can.
Yeah,
but they haven't released a statement on the subject as of yet. Things aren't looking good for Lucas, man. Like, all the potential in the world. As I've said before, he is the biggest puncher I've been in the ring with.
Go to the butcher shop. Their steaks are fine. And just eat them. You'll be sweet.
You're covered.
There you go.
And for the second time tonight, That's the end of Before.
Can I hit this space bar right here? We done?
Hit stop now.
One of these guys won the Australian heavyweight boxing title. The other was told to f*** off by Angelina Jolie. Squad Goals, Scotty and Ben's Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast.
Well, we just mentioned the butcher shop then at the end of Biforama because that's where Lucas Brown obviously needs to go because there's no clenbuterol in any of those steaks at the butcher shop. Benny, you were in there this week. You got yourself a big steak after training and you couldn't eat it because you were too worked up from training.
I was cooked, man. I was rolling around with two purple belts and a blue belt, old Damien Kennedy, Foscarini, and Big Steve Rudick.
Yep.
Got my ass handed to me, but geez, I had to go. And I thought, it's lunchtime. We just finished training and go get a feed. So I went to the butcher shop, stocked up, got meat for days. Got to catch up with Seth, went home, cooked the steak, and then just looked at it for like 5 minutes. Like, man, this like looks awesome. But I had a bite, it tastes awesome, but I can't eat anything right now. I was well and truly cooked.
Too worked up.
Overcooked.
Too worked up.
Overcooked. Nice work. But the steak wasn't overcooked.
Yeah, we've got to get Stevie. We've got to get Stevie over to the butcher shop because he hasn't tried the awesomeness there yet.
He'll be flying. Yeah, he'll be full level.
Even more. Look forward to it.
No, you love it, mate. I've actually got some of the chicken. I don't even know what I mean, but those chicken things you put in the oven that are wrapped up in the little twiny thing.
Yeah, yeah. They've got a heap. There's chicken delights awesome. And chicken queens.
I've got two
a
of them,
of them.
Defrosting
yeah, nice.
Right now, waiting for me when I get home. I can't wait.
Very nice. And folks, if you head over to the Butcher Shop's Facebook page from today, the day this podcast comes out, they've got a $500 meat raffle. Running on their Facebook page right now. It'll be drawn on December 16, so that will sort Christmas and New Year out for the entire family. Leg hams, turkeys, the whole lot. So go and get it. It is the best meat in Canberra, hands down, and they're wonderful sponsors of this podcast.
Oh, Christmas. The thing is, can you stop the singing? Can you please stop the singing?
God almighty, can you please stop with the fucking Christmas songs?
Back on the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast, we're up to our Christmas classic special. Now, Scotty, last week we began this little segment, and in the last couple of weeks we're going to finish off with a few more Christmas crackers.
Yeah,
did we?
We did. Yeah, Things I Want with Jack Black and Sum 41 last week, and which is sensational.
Farty, it was much better than the listener request.
The listener request last week, didn't Clarky copy on
happy,
Facebook?
Wasn't happy.
That was good,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
Clarky
said,
Cold War classic, Clarky.
At least I didn't get an uppercut. Well, the year's not out yet. So. But this is the first time I ever came across South Park. I was getting ready to go bounce up at Mossvale.
This was one of the first season?
Yeah, I think it was first or second season. And back when it used to be on a Saturday night at like 8:30
on
SBS. It's
like 97 or something.
And I've got out of the shower and turned the telly on while I was getting ready to go bouncing. And there's this singing shit on TV. And I'm like, what is this?
Where have you been
this?
All my life?
and then South Park just blew up. And just the whole idea of a poo that comes out on Christmas Day because you've been eating heaps of food, wearing a Christmas hat, who sings to you, is sensational.
It's original.
We're going to start with the poo. Next week, we'll have the farty bells. We're very highbrow, this podcast. Yeah.
Bells has been requested a lot this week.
Seriously, that's
a number one smash hit.
That was one of the most popular things I ever put to air when I was at the radio station, which is kind of depressing when you spend hours writing stuff, but all people wanted to hear was jingle bells made with fart sounds.
There's a lot of hope for the human race. Though. We're good.
Here's Mr. Hanky. Get into it.
We've all heard of Rudolph and his shiny nose, and we all know Frosty, who's made out of snow. But all of those stories seem kind of gay, 'cause we all know who brightens up our holiday. Mr. Hanky, the Christmas poo, small and brown, he comes from you. Sit on the toilet, here he comes, squeezing tween your festive buns. A present from down below, spreading joy with a howdy ho. He's seen the love inside of you, 'cause he's a piece of poo. Sometimes he's nutty, sometimes he's corny, he can be brown or greenish brown. But if you eat fiber on Christmas Eve, he might come to your town. Mr. Hanky, the Christmas poo, he loves me, I love you, therefore vicariously he loves you.
I can make him Mr. Hanky too.
Well, Kyle, where is he? He's coming. Come on, dude, push.
I'm trying.
Oh, wait, I can see his head. Here he comes.
say, howdy ho ho, yum yum yum. Christmas time has come.
Sometimes he's runny,
sometimes he's firm,
sometimes he's practically water.
Sometimes he hangs off the end of your ass and won't fall in the toilet, cause he's just clinging to your sphincter, and he won't drop off, and so you shake your ass around, try to get it to drop in the toilet, and finally it does.
Mr. Hanky, the Christmas poo, when Christmas leaves, he must leave too. Flush him down, but he's never gone. His smell and his spirit lingers on.
He's a world champion with countless belts. He's a guy who struggles to find a good fitting belt. You're listening to the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast
with Scotty Masters
and Ben the Governor Edwards.
Episode 28 is what you've stumbled across of the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast. Thanks to The Butcher Shop and Lang's Auto. Stevie P, it is your turn at the microphone, my friend.
Can I just cut in as I always do before?
Sure.
Thanks.
No one's going to argue
it.
With
I love
you.
When you do that, Benny.
You're a world Thanks, champion. Sorry, we're not going to argue
are
with
are
you.
Are we allowed to, mm-hmm. because, am I allowed to announce what's going on with the Macca Warrior?
Sure, sure.
Well, Stevie P is joining us full time next year. We're all very excited.
Yay!
And obviously, he's going to have his segment every week as well.
Yeah.
We need a name. Can we put it out there?
Oh, do you really want to give democracy a chance to name this segment?
I want to give socialism a chance. We'll tell you what you're...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, maybe...
No, just shoot us some ideas and...
Yeah, over Christmas,
know,
we'll
if
we
if find one that we like, you know, we might give you credit.
Hmm?
We'll,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Am I just for a bit of a brainstorm.
Yeah, no, we can put it out there for sure. Right. Definitely.
Now, Stevie, right. I promise I won't cut in for at least 30 seconds. It's all yours. The floor is yours.
Benny, cut away,
man. I know you're fired up about one thing today, man.
I am indeed. Yeah, we'll get onto that one a little bit later on. But a pretty wacky week in the world of sports this week. I mean, there's been all sorts of positive stories, negative stories, and some really, you know, interesting ones in terms of competitiveness that I want to hear what you boys think. It's mm-hmm. been a cracking week, actually, and it usually is coming up to this time of year. There's a lot going on. You know, at a point where the rugby league season, AFL season and domestic rugby seasons, for example, are all over. There's a lot going on sort of worldwide as they approach their winters.
Or as I call it, the rapture.
The rapture.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Cricket boys, first and foremost, I wanted to touch on our win against South Africa. We finally won a test after having lost, I think, 5 or 6 in a row, Scotty.
Yep.
So that was a real positive. The gripe I have with it all now is that we've just finished a really good test series. There's a bit of hype about the new bloke coming through.
Yep.
You know, Hanscom had a good debut and a few other boys played well. Now we're in a situation where we're about to play a different country in a different format.
Yeah.
Starting next week, I believe, and one of those is going to be at Manuka Oval. Then what's happening is we're going to go back to a test series against Pakistan. Then we're going to play Pakistan in 2020s. Then we're going to play somebody else in, I think, South
one
Africa
days.
Maybe coming back in
so
one
what
day.
Was it? It goes from like a one day to a 4
because it used to be when I was a kid growing up.
Tell them how it was.
Same
Scotty,
for you. Well, it used to be
was.
this time of year you'd have your test series.
Always
your test series would be the lead up to summer. You'd have the Boxing Day test and generally one after that.
The New Year's Day test, SCG.
Then you would start your one days, and your one days would run all the way through January. And when you went back to school in February, it was around the finals of the one days.
Correct.
And that was it. And then they'd go overseas for an Ashes, but it's all about the almighty dollar now.
That's it. But it's just changing so much that it's taken away the lust for the sport for me a little bit.
Saturated.
Yeah, it's too much.
That's it. What they're doing, number one, and as I'll caveat with everything I say, you know, tonight, it's just my opinion, but I feel that they're handing out baggy greens like they're not as sacred as they used to be, Scotty. Do you remember when like a debutant would come in back in the day? It would be such a big deal.
Yeah,
now baggy greens are handing out one-day caps, T20 caps.
Yeah.
You can't keep up with the players anymore. You don't know who's playing well. Big Bash is in there filtered in as well, which is quite difficult to keep an eye on. Who's
it's hard
doing
to follow
well
if you're not in the know.
I'm finding it difficult to follow and my interest is waning.
I think the reverence is certainly still there with the baggy green.
Yeah.
I honestly think that's still there because I know Heels gave one out. And they always get former players that come in, Katic
and Bucky Rogers as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Handed them out.
they still do that, but yeah, with one dayers and things like that, I don't think there's a huge amount on as far as the actual hat ceremony. Well. Yeah.
So surely it's a case now. Can I say that we've picked a team now which is rejuvenated, a lot of young guys. Give them a crack. Pakistan are up there at the moment. They're one of the best test teams in the world. They haven't played a home game for a long time, which means they're playing everything. Their home games are in the UAE because of the security
terrorism,
situation.
Yep.
Their away games are all around the world, and they're a good side.
What's the
Pakistan,
UAE United Arab Emirates?
Emirates. Yep.
Yep. So that's basically...
You can't play test cricket at Abbottabad. Not anymore. You can't.
Sounds bad.
The UAE is the country that makes up the Emirates.
I thought you said UAN, sorry.
No, you're UAE. So all the Emirates of Abu Dhabi, cool. Dubai, Sharjah, all those type of things. So they're a good side. They'll test us. But what are we going to do if we come out, lose a first test in Brisbane, the day-night test, and all of a sudden we're going to go into Boxing Day and change it again? I just think we've got to leave it now. Let these guys become a big household name and gel, and let Steve Smith lead the team. So we'll see how that goes.
I think as you spoke about, I think it was last week. How do you think there's Aussie cricket's not what it used to be, even for the younger generation as well? But as I said, when I was in Dubai, don't kick the mic, mate.
That's how filthy I am with Aussie cricket.
He's not happy. But look at it in Dubai, obviously very wealthy country. Hmm. There's kids playing cricket on every street corner over here. You know, bloody backyards are too small. And
well, nowadays that's it. Yeah, I mean that was a great. I saw a great tweet on social media. Actually, a positive that came out of social media when it broke's gone.
No wonder
we can't produce a cricket team anymore. Has anyone seen what size backyards they're building houses?
Yeah.
No one can mow a piece of cricket pitch out the back.
Yeah,
so.
That's all we used to do.
Oh, look,
and backyard footy as well.
Remember being out playing cricket every day, man. Kicking the ball outside,
and you lose
day.
The ball over the. You jump the fence. Oh, your neighbour's like, all right,
and if they had a garden, filthy. What do you?
I don't know how many 6 stitches I put through asbestos sheds in Newcastle. Seriously, exactly. Heaps of them.
Oh, I remember putting balls through windows. My old man's front window, his garage window. Yeah. What are you doing? But
I had a great cover drive and mesothelioma. Yeah. Fantastic.
an excellent fall defence and
and a life-threatening disease. Yes, awesome.
So let's see how we go against Pakistan, boys. Moving on, the Formula One Championship ended this past weekend. Cracking finale.
Rosberg
taking out the title, Benny. He followed in the footsteps of Damon and Graham Hill. His father, Rosberg's father, won the championship back in the 1970s.
Rosberg? Yep. Yeah.
So another father-son combination. The thing that's bothered me about this is all the conjecture that's come out about Hamilton slowing up whilst in the lead. The situation was...
Are they teammates
in the same team. Hamilton was in first place. Rosberg, I believe, Scotty, correct me if I'm wrong, had to finish fourth or below.
I do believe that was the case.
And if that happened, Hamilton would have actually won the championship.
So you think the team has told him?
Yep, so what happened was, Benny, is the team was instructing Hamilton to race clear, which means that Rosberg had a clear path ahead of him.
So take the corners wide, give him a place to pass?
No, not to get
out front so he had room in front of him.
So that means that Rosberg can put the foot down as well. But what Hamilton doing was slowing up ahead of him to back Rosberg into the chasing pack, which means that the chasing pack will come up and have a chance to overtake him and actually
lose
get
him
out
the championship.
So he was going against his own team.
He was going against his own team.
We call that in Australia.
No, for the world title championship, for the individual title. That already wrapped up the constructors' title weeks ago.
So it's a bit unsportsmanlike.
That's right. Well, I don't think it was. I mean, the big argument was after that, Hamilton is trying to win a world championship as in a sport which does have the team and the constructors basis behind it. But he's trying to win a big individual prize, and he went against his team's instructions. So maybe is it a case that Formula One now need to separate the two drivers, one team? Because if you're those two
that's
drivers,
happened before.
Remember Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel situation 4 or 5 years ago? That was that. I mean, that's hard.
There's no love lost
there
for Mark Webber. He hates Vettel's guts.
He does, doesn't he? He still does. And fair enough. So I don't know. I felt the coverage it got afterwards was all about bad sportsmanship, this and that. I'm like, oh god, all right, what's he supposed to do? Not try and win the world title? Yeah. How do you judge it? I don't know. That's a tricky one.
Just back onto Webber, I do remember a great quote when he was on Top Gear with Clarkson, and they were talking about that, and because Clarkson's gone, I want to talk to you about you just see Webber go, oh shit, here we go. Didn't you just want to get out and punch him after that? And Webber, without batting an eyelid or taking a breath, said, my dad told me not to hit boys. Which was just the best smackdown. That was just a
fuck you.
Great smackdown, wasn't it? Yeah.
Mate, that's perfect. Good way to come back in.
What are the the engines they're doing now. They,
they're V6s,
aren't they?
Twin
turbo V6s.
Yeah, they sound shit.
Or 8s, I think. They're going back up to 10s.
Didn't they change them back to
the 8s? Yeah, well, no, I think they're going back. But yeah, this last couple of years, they've sounded horrible.
Because I remember there was a comparison on the Tube.
Yeah.
And it was like, here's the old cars school. From 2000 to this year, and it's completely different.
Yeah.
And I remember my auntie lives in Brighton in Melbourne, and you can hear the race start. Mm. And we were there in 2008, and it sounded pretty bloody awesome.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, it just wasn't the same.
No.
I thought someone it's like, difference a soccer mum van in the
difference
driveway.
Between a Maloo and a soccer mum van, yeah. Benny.
Don't go there, man. Don't go there, man.
A purring leopard versus a slow armadillo. The SMV. Oh, dear me. So, yeah, Formula One. Hopefully, that's been a big spot of conjecture the last few years is the engine. So, hopefully, that'll change next year. There's going to be a few rule changes as well, which, from what I understand, the teams are quite happy with. So, we'll study those into next year.
Are they still looking at slowing the cars down any more than what they are? The safety record's pretty bloody good now.
It is good now.
Now it is, yeah. Modern technology.
But they didn't, about like 6-7 years ago, they really started putting a lot of restrictions on performance and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, which I think is quite serious. You look at Alonso, had that injury, and then who was the fellow that passed away a few years ago?
I'm not sure if it happened in IndyCar, but I think it was an IndyCar guy that actually came to Formula One. He lost both his legs or something like that.
Yeah.
Wasn't that one of the catalysts for the
technology and all that sort of stuff? Yeah,
it's crazy. Yeah. But all those safety features, they're just transferred across into our daily drivers.
Correct.
So it's all good for us.
Yeah. So moving on to the NBA, boys, just wanted to make mention of a gentleman who has really come out of the shadow of somebody who was potentially getting in his way at Oklahoma City. Russell Westbrook at the moment is in career best form, and he's currently averaging a triple-double every single game. So they've played 18 games so far, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Kevin Durant has moved on to the Golden State Warriors, and now he's playing in a star-studded team with Steph
Curry. Still
Steph
in there?
Curry,
yeah, yeah.
And I'll think of the other two blokes in
Love.
Not no, Love. No, not Love. Clay Thompson and a few of the other boys there. Yeah. They're a great side, GSW, but he's currently averaging a triple-double every single game.
What's a triple-double?
Yeah, so what a triple-double is, it is double
figures. Is it a burger?
It could be.
That's his post-match stats, Benny. It's a triple-double is being in double figures for the three most prominent stats of a game, so points, assists, and rebounds.
Okay.
So he's basically averaging like 27 points a game, 15-odd assists, and 10 rebounds or something like that. And it's a measure of, I guess, how good you are as the lead player in the team. Cool. Now, there's only one guy who's gone through the entire season, Oscar Robertson back in 1962, who averaged a triple-double every single game. So minimum 10 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists every single game. So he is really shining now in a team where he had Serge Ibaka, he had Kevin Durant, guys ahead of him who are really good. And funnily enough, KD's left that team and gone to Golden State into a team where, you know, MVP from a few years ago, champion side, you know, Steph Curry and the like are there at GSW, Draymond Green's there. It's a fantastic team. And he's actually almost outshining Steph Curry now and taking the pressure off him so that Curry can just go back against
he's
the ball.
He's just smashing threes, isn't
he? Have you seen him, Scott? He broke the record about 3 weeks ago.
15 or something.
Something like that. 13 or 15 three-pointers in a game. But that's just his three. So what are we talking there? Yeah. 35, 40 points, never mind the rest of what he's doing in the game. Yeah. So just wanted to make mention of that. I mean, there's just guys excelling in their sport at the moment. He's doing a great job. So the standings in the NBA at the moment, it's all pretty well as per you what you'd expect. The teams that are doing well from last year, Cleveland on the East, the champions, 13-3 at the moment.
How many conferences are there in the NBA?
Two. There's two, Benny.
East and West.
East and West. Okay. And then there's, I think, 8 divisions. Hmm. So they have like Midwest, Pacific, Atlantic, you know, all the different divisions, all that sort of thing. Toronto second, 11-6. They are both of the Eastern Conference finalists from last year.
Yep.
So those guys are top two in the East. And then in the West, you've got GSW, the Warriors, 16-2. They're on like an 11-game streak.
What's Golden State?
Golden State is
San Fran
up,
in there,
is up in San Fran area. Yeah, okay. They play out of Oakland. Basically,
is that the bridge?
The
Bay Area, they call it, up there in Oakland and San Fran and that area. That's where they're from. So
where Metallica came from.
Yeah.
Correct.
Bay Area.
Yes, the Bay Area back there. So that's where those guys, San Antonio in second, 14-4. So quick NBA wrap there for everybody.
Nice. Now I know what a triple double is.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, so when you hear that, you're well.
I'll be able to pretend I know what I'm talking about.
couple of sad and strange ones in the world of sport as well. Chad Robinson, the former Parramatta and Sydney Roosters player, has gone missing. This is a really strange one. His brother still plays at the Sharks.
I read that.
He's 36 years of age, played 160 NRL games. You know, a pretty distinguished career, I reckon you could say. He went missing over the weekend and he's still not found. There's a similar situation in some senses to De Bont over there in the Netherlands. No one knows where he is.
And did he walk out of his house? No phone, no keys?
Yeah, something like
no
that.
No shoes or something?
Yeah, no shoes as well. Yeah, there was some strange circumstances behind it. His family have come out now and made a massive plea about it and made it public because it's been a fair few days.
Yeah, Ray Hadley's been talking about it this week on the radio, obviously, with his connection with rugby league and everything. And yeah, it's bizarre.
Yep, absolutely strange. So, I mean, best wishes to him and his family. But, I mean, it's just these funny stories. I don't know. I think people are a little bit more shocked at these days as well in the world of social media, in the world of constant contact, mobile phones.
Yep.
To just go missing is quite different. Maybe someone just wants to go and get away from that, you know, the world of
constant. Staying in contact is so easy these days.
It is. That's right. So that's a strange one. All the best for him and his family. In English football, a really disturbing story has come out in the last week about Crewe Alexandria and their famed academy from back in the 80s and 90s of sexual abuse of young boys, and a former coach that I believe his name is Barry Bennell, but I don't want to go into
allegedly.
Allegedly, that's right, because it's all in the news and they're talking about it. But what it has done is brought to the attention this issue of, you know, coaching and regulation of coaching of young sporting teams, boys and girls, because the players are just coming out everywhere now. The first guy came out last week and mentioned that he'd been sexually abused for years and years and years and years.
Yep.
There was a story about a young guy who played under Ferguson at Man U as a youth, and Fergie was giving it to him. What's wrong with you, mate? What's wrong? His just head wasn't right. Obviously, completely oblivious to what his poor kid was going through.
Yeah.
So I think, if anything, what it's done is he's brought attention onto it worldwide to make sure that these things are regulated properly. You don't want pedophiles anywhere near
kids, let alone
sporting teams. It's really disturbing stuff. So.
Did you see that numpty was trying to get pedophilia looked at not as a crime but as an illness?
Yeah.
Or, obviously, it's an illness. Yeah. But it's
was an interesting
crime,
one. Yeah. It really was. It was a German professor, I believe, who was trying to say he was running a campaign, Benny, which was... It's okay to feel like it, but you must not act on it.
Act on it, yeah.
Like it's you know.
From what I've read, like these people that suffer from this, they don't see it any differently to the same way the three of us look at a woman and go, "Wow, she's hot."
Yeah.
They unfortunately do it, and that's not sticking up for them, but that's their headspace. They don't know that. That's not the norm.
I just hate how they try and rope it into the same category as being gay.
It's got nothing to do with it.
If it's consensual, it's all good.
Yeah, that's right.
It can't be consensual when it's a child.
No, that's exactly right.
But the thing is, you're saying, Scotty, is always very pertinent. It's a very smart point, and that is that it's not, you're not defending it, but what you are doing is making commentary on the experts, the people who do study this, and I think we do have to take some liberty out of what they say, that these people have these thoughts and deem it as normal. Now, it's not defending it, but crikey's...
Oh, and as a parent, like, you know, if you found out anyone had touched your kids, you'd kill
them.
You would go to jail.
Oh, yeah. I've heard stats that up to 1 in 4 people have, like, pedophilic tendencies.
Really?
What? Like, that high. Shit. That's fucking horrifying.
So don't bring someone else in this room, then.
Well, if next year we have a guest in.
Oh, pull a name out of the hat. Oh, it's just shocking.
That's scary.
It really is. Yeah. So, that's one to watch in the media. A lot of these players have
That's born too. That's not nurture. That's born.
A lot of these players in this Crewe Alexandria case have forfeited their right to privacy, which means they can be named as the victims.
Yep.
And I think that means that they forfeit a lot of other legal rights that come with that. But they're just trying to make this story as known as possible. So very sad stuff there. English Premier League, boys, is turning out to be a fantastic title race at the moment. You've got Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester City and Arsenal in the top four, all very close at the moment, within 3 points. Fantastic race. Manchester United really struggling at the moment. Jose, Portuguese. His name is Jose, Benny.
Yeah.
Jose Mourinho suspended again, it looks like, now third time this season already. I'm not sure if you know a whole lot about Jose Mourinho, but very successful coach. Won the Premiership with Chelsea 3 times. He's won the Champions League. And
Is he the dude with the longish hair?
Used to have longish hair. It's shorter now.
Yeah, okay.
He cut his long hair and he's mature now.
He's a very maligned...
Hey, fuck you.
He grew up, Scotty.
Oh, speaking of the WWE champion. Yeah, so he's a much maligned coach. And
well, what do you get suspended for?
Kicking a water bottle and remonstrating with officials and abusing referees.
You can't abuse like the officials. That's passionate. Shit if someone kicks a water
that's
bottle.
Passionate. That's yeah. it. That's what it is. It is passionate.
Kicking a water bottle.
And he's a wog.
Ricky Stewart.
Come on.
Ricky Stewart kicks the shit out of plastic chairs on the side of Canberra Stadium.
It's good for the sport.
I think it's great. The crowd's like, you can't go off at officials. You can't make officials feel threatened when they're trying to do their job.
Yeah, so that's turning out to be a great race. Man, you're struggling at the moment.
You're not going for Arsenal by any chance, are you?
Oh, you know me, Ben. Come on, mate.
When are you getting a tattoo like Conti?
Yeah, probably never. Nothing against him. I'm just not a tat man.
If they win it.
Oh, no. Didn't he tell you? You've got to give yourself an uppercut podcast tattoo if you're going to join the ranks full time.
Oh, dear, we've borrowed it.
We've got him on our ass. We've got him on our ass cheeks. All right.
Have you got the branding iron ready, boys? Oh, that'd be good. So, yeah, that's turning out. And just a last note, a word to all the Brazilian fans, families, and also the team that were part of that plane crash that went down yesterday. This team, Chaco Once, were a team from southern Brazil. They were heading towards Medellin.
The way I heard about it is they were massive underdogs.
Absolutely.
Essentially like the Queanbeyan Ruse taking on the Melbourne Storm.
Yeah.
Kind of vibe.
Exactly.
But in
right.
soccer.
Scotty, you're spot
on. I always put everything in the rugby league, Stevie. They got a win.
That's what it was.
They were on the way.
I saw them, I think it was their last match. They were on the change room together. Yeah. They were celebrating. They were pumped up.
A few hours later, they're dead.
Massive underdog story. They were heading towards the final of the Copa Sudamericana, which I'm trying to think what I can liken it to in Australian terms. It's like a second-tier cup competition that's played intercontinentally. So picture something like, I guess if you've got all the rugby league teams from Australia all together and they all played in like a big cup competition, where the teams are drawn out and go through quarters, semi-finals, that sort of thing. They were massive underdogs going against a team called Atletico Nacional from Colombia. So they're heading there for the first leg of the final. And their plane went down due to electrical issues. So it's one of those situations where it's very sad because there's nothing behind it in terms of war.
Was there any survivors?
Yeah, I think there is. Benny.
About 76 people, I believe.
Last reports are there haven't been many. A goalkeeper died in hospital. Another player died in hospital.
And there were journalists on the plane that died.
You said to me off air, one of the players made it to the hospital.
Yep.
He's the goalkeeper. Wife. Yeah.
Yeah. The guy called his wife and just wanted to say goodbye and basically say, Jesus, please look after my family, my wife, and I'm headed up to heaven because I need a goalkeeper up there. My mate's already there. So
I saw some comparisons.
Heart-wrenching stuff, mate.
Some comparisons drawn today by the rugby team in the Andes.
And this happened in the 60s or the 50s with Manchester United.
Absolutely, Scotty.
Yeah. Really?
The Munich disaster happened back in the Busby Babes were 59, I think it was around that time.
A world famous team. And all of them.
Absolutely. Like legends of the sport died during that one. And then there's also Torino, a great Italian football team. They were five-time champions in a row. Their team was a core of the Italian World Cup winning team back in 54.
It's still so shocking in modern day. You think how safe plane travel is.
Well, and they still are compared with road travel, but
things go pear-shaped in a plane.
And don't get me wrong, it's not taking away anything from any casualties that are in war and seeing around the world at the moment, but it's just a very sad
shock.
It's a sad story.
It's even more unexpected.
I think it hits home more because it's got to do with sport. Sport is a thing that all three of us.
It's a great leveler, isn't it?
It's a great leveler. It brings us all together without the politics and the crap. So there's a lot of sad families and fans.
Who were they? Not to throw any businesses under the bus. Who were they flying with?
It was a chartered plane, but through a private company. So it wasn't a big name.
That might explain something.
You never know.
So that's a wrap, boys. That's nice the world one. Of sport. Plenty of ups, plenty of downs, plenty of positives, negatives. I guess it's all happening in the world of sport, but that's why we love it. As you said, Scotty, the great leveler that is. What was it, Benny?
The vast planet of physical endeavours.
We're coming up with a better name than that for Stevie's segment.
The VPPE.
Sounds like a disease.
So, yes, it does.
I'm pretty sure Steve's had that one.
Need advice? You've come to the wrong place. But Scotty and Ben will have a crack at your conundrum anyway. It's listener question time.
It is listener question time, and Benny, I'm going to smash through this one for you, mate. This is from Tony on Facebook, and he's got a question for you.
Tony or Tori?
Tori. Very good. I was just making sure you were paying attention. Well done.
You passed the Tori test.
I passed the dyslexic test.
He says, Gov, we've seen some kickboxers and boxers not transfer to MMA too well, and it seems as though it's got a lot to do with footwork. Plodding around, kickboxers tend to be easily taken down, but the styles like TJ Dillashaw, Wonderboy Thompson, and Dos Santos, which are very footwork and movement orientated, do so much better against the wrestlers and letting their hands go. Are you going to be looking at trying to change your footwork style in your transition to MMA? Is that what it's all about for you?
Yeah, he's exactly right there. Yep. Striking in MMA is so different to kickboxing and boxing. Like, people always say, oh, you know, MMA guys sloppy, they keep their hands down. You have to keep your hands down to defend a takedown. You cannot commit to a punch like in a kickboxing or a boxing fight in MMA with the threat of a takedown. Because if I try and throw a real hard jab and put all the weight on my lead leg, if my opponent gets that leg, I'm going to be on my ass real quick.
Mm.
So everyone that says, oh, you know, MMA does have a lot of sloppy strikers. Don't get me wrong. We're not quite there yet. But you look at it in 10 years, it's going to be pretty bloody crisp.
Yeah.
It's only a very young sport. But when you have the threat of a takedown, it changes everything. It is a huge variable. And boxing and kickboxing, I transitioned quite well. I was happy with that. But not everyone can. Because in boxing, you know, you move your head a lot. You move your feet a lot. If you do that in kickboxing, you move your head a lot, you're probably going to move your head into a knee or a kick at some stage. Yep. You move your feet a lot, you can't defend a leg kick, so you can't check. So there's huge differences just in those two sports, let alone when you add the factor of getting taken down. It's a huge variable. And just like I've done in my previous two sports, I will make the adjustments. And how I strike in MMA is going to be very different to how I strike in boxing and kickboxing. But I'll still be letting the old ghetto whoppers go. Don't worry about
that. So what we saw in Combat 8 against Donnie Lester will be a very different Ben Edwards to what we see in the next 12 months or so. That was
panic stations. That was the second time I'd fought in MMA gloves in 7 years. I could only see in one eye.
Yep.
A lot of pressure on me. Everyone was expecting me to walk through the guy.
Yep.
I fought Paul Skowinski 3 weeks earlier.
Yeah.
I'm a lot better than that,
yep.
But still, it showed my heart, showed my chin. I'm happy with all of that, but I have a very high fight IQ, and you'll see that when I start cracking some heads in the MMA cage.
Like to hear it. There you go, Tori/Tony. Your question is answered.
On the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast.
I think we got a show.
Oh, yeah, we got a show.
It's listener request time.
You know, to liven things up.
Back on the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast, Scotty, Benny, and me, Stevie P. Good answer to that question, Benny. Fantastic, mate. Looking forward to seeing you in the MMA.
That's some good confidence, Benny.
You two are a good influence, man. I just wanted to make sure I didn't sound like an arrogant knob.
No, you sounded confident. No, that's good. I've seen it, and you probably have too, Steve. In the last 2 to 3 months, your confidence has come back.
Mm. It's my mojo.
That's good.
It's like
my mojo's back. Awesome.
Dean is your middle name, Benny.
it's just good doing all new training, and I'm doing well. I'm loving it, mate. I'm 20 years old, just starting new again, mate.
All right, this segment's not about you, Ben. This is about the listener. So, Stevie, what have we got?
Oh, hang on a sec. No, I'm just kidding.
interrupt. No, I love it. On to our listener request this week, boys. It's from Pat Malloy. This song is The Resistance by Skillet.
I love me some Skillet, man. The first time I heard Skillet was at a pole dancing show. This real hot chick was swinging off a pole, as they do.
Yep.
She was dancing to Hero by Skillet. And then I got really into him, and also downloaded Awake and Alive.
Yeah, well, I haven't heard this one. I hadn't really heard of him because I thought it was a typo. I thought they meant Skrillex.
Bangarang!
Dope. But no, I looked him up. And yeah, they obviously... I love him. What was the thing with Harley Quinn, the Aussie bird, the superhero movie that came out not long ago, Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
There was a montage of Suicide Squad from the movie with one of their songs in it.
I love it. So, I love metal with chicks singing.
Mm.
That's why I love Nightwish, love Skillet, man.
Yeah,
awesome.
Nice. Well, this is a great song, The Resistance. It's for Pat Malloy off Facebook. Let's get into it.
And the million faces won't care, the made for elevation. And the soldier won't surrender faith. This I can find the never.
that burns to embers. The voice of the unheard. Love is the answer.
I gotta speak and believe it, that's how I feel inside.
I can't sit here quiet.
You can take my heart, you can take my breath. When you pry it from that cold dead chest.
This is how it lies, oh. Heavy as a hurricane, louder than a freight train. This is how it lies, oh. Heart is beating faster, feels like thunder. Magic static, call me a fanatic. It's our world, they can never have it. This is how it lies, oh. It's our resistance, you can't resist. Sleeping in the shadows could be making history. Through the fire, on the water, used to be a slave, but now you are a conqueror.
They can take my heart, they can take my breath. When they pry it from my cold dead chest.
This is how it lies, oh. Heavy as a hurricane, louder than a freight train. This is how it lies, oh. Heart is beating faster, feels like thunder. Magic step. It's our world, they can never have it. This is how we rise, oh. It's our resistance, you can't resist us.
Rising up, 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 up. We're rising up, 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 up. Rising up, 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 up. We're rising up, 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 up. Rising up, 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 up. We're rising up.
You can't resist us!
This is how we rise, oh. Heavy as a hurricane, louder than a freight train.
This is how we rise, oh.
Heart is beating faster, feels like thunder.
Magic static, call me a fanatic. It's our world, they can never have it.
This is how we rise, oh.
It's our resistance, you can't resist us.
There they are. That is Skillet and the Resistance on the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast. And I'm going to put it out there now. Next week's request is already taken care of by Duke Didier on the show. All right.
He's anyone that knows Duke, it's not going to be a surprise.
No, it's Bon Jovi. So we'll get that on the show next week.
I've got a Duke Bon Jovi story. Like, he always comes out to it when he fights. He's Bon Jovi, man. I'm training with him straight after this. There'll be Bon Jovi in the background.
Yeah.
But he was at a house party a few months ago. And I can't remember the exact story, but there was this drunk guy there that had to go. And Duke, obviously Duke being the Duke, top dog there, he was the one that got asked to get rid of this dude. Yeah. So Duke said to me, he goes, all right, I had to go. I put on Bon Jovi. He got pumped up and then went and asked him to leave. So the guy left straight away. But
oh man,
a bad name was in the background.
I used to have pump up songs when I used to be on the way to Mossvale for bouncing and stuff.
Dude, you would not believe what I listen to going to work, man. I'm like a 13 year old girl. I love that shit.
Plenty of Bieber.
Carly Rae Jepsen, Bieber.
Oh, it pumps me up. One Direction. I love that shit, man.
I
keep interrupting everyone. I'm shutting up.
It is Uppercut of the Week time. And Stevie, this is based off the Brazilian soccer tragedy. You were pretty fired up with Ben and I via text message today about this. Take it away, man.
I was. Rightly so. Thank you very much. So I don't want to make this a massive long preamble. I do want to make some pertinent points about this. The context to the story is there's a comedian from Melbourne. His name is Adam Rosenbach.
No and one's ever heard
actually
of
a comedian.
He's actually a comedian as well.
And so does a podcast, right?
He does a podcast, does an AFL podcast. He also does a little bit of work for Channel 10.
Okay.
He's associated with the Carlton Footy Club on their webpage in some way as well.
Yeah, right.
So I did a bit of research because I certainly didn't want to come into anything like this half-cocked. I think it's important to always have the knowledge behind it now.
Yep.
Being a comedian, as we have discussed as well, boys, there's a lot of topics you can touch on which are controversial, which get laughs. But as you said today, Benny, comedy is all about timing as well. As you know,
tragedy and timing, tragedy, it makes the best comedy.
Tragedy and timing make the best comedy. So what happened was he put out a tweet pretty soon after this event was unfolding to
say, the plane crash,
after the plane crash, to say that the survivors at the crash, now this is sick, this is not exactly word for word, but the survivors at the crash, the ones that were left remaining were heard shouting penalty, penalty.
Because it was a plane full of soccer players.
Because it was a plane full of soccer players. So there's also that connotation there of the, you know, dislike of soccer players and diving and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
so there's a bit more of a stereotype that came with it. When I first read it, I was a little bit, I was pretty annoyed by it, to
be
fair.
Yeah, you're pretty fired
because
up.
I thought this is just shocking timing. There's a, think about it beyond anything other than the objective fact that a whole bunch of people have just died because a plane have come down.
Correct.
Okay? There is, you know, those odd jokes that come with soccer players and diving and all that sort of stuff. Mm. Get this. He tweeted about 20 minutes late, deleted the original tweet, as they do. But if it's such a big joke, mate, why don't you leave the tweet up for a start? There's a guy that came out and defended him about 20 minutes later going, oh, you, all you PC people, here you are again having a whinge about something. He deleted his tweet too. Well, come on, big balls, both of you guys. If you've got the nuts for it, keep it up and take the criticism because it's there.
Yeah.
Came out with an apology afterwards that said, I didn't realise the gravity of the situation. Now, I thought that was a joke too. I thought he was taking the mickey a second time because it was a plane crash.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. It was an apology. But I took that as an offensive thing as well. Now,
not taking responsibility
for what he said. So what happened there was is that the backlash was absolutely crazy. I'll say this as briefly as I can. Mm-hmm. Everyone's entitled to an opinion, us included. We're paid, and in our case, not paid in these cases to give our opinion. That's what professional punditry is all about. Okay, we do that with our humble opinions. People can write in and criticize us as much as they want, but that's what we're here for. You need to be tactful and respectful and also think about what these things mean, because more than the case of just offending a whole heap of people, the thing that you need to be the most conscious of is that at a time of grief, when people are upset, it incites hatred it incites violence, and it incites these vilifying tactics that they're trying to rid out of society.
Strong emotional
reaction. Now, the Brazilian media got hold of this a couple of hours ago.
Of course they did.
So the Brazilian chief, 4.6 million, in a small network, had got this out already, basically saying, how dare you insult us in our national game as well.
It makes Australia look freaking
bad. And it makes us look really, really poor. So the point I want to make is that you need to look at these things in two ways. The objective facts are that a plane has just crashed and gone down. A lot of people have lost their lives. A lot of families don't have their fathers, brothers, and sons anymore and all that sort of thing. Subjectively, you can make all the jokes you want about situations, but when it's got to do with sport, this is why got to me this morning. Sport is something that brings us all together. Scotty, you love your footy, you love your beef, you love everything.
Wars have stopped for sport for periods of time in the past.
Absolutely.
In World War One over at Gallipoli, they stopped and had a soccer match on Christmas Day.
That's exactly right. I mean, sport is something that is just so much. Sport is 80% of my life.
It's a metaphor for life.
That's it. It brings people together.
I will say, as someone who was paid for a lot of years as an entertainer, and I don't class myself as a comedian because I'm not a comedian, and that's an insult to friends I have who are professional comedians, but my job was to provide light entertainment, serious entertainment when it was provided. Mm-hmm. Occasionally I would try and be as funny as I could be, and you do that, and you piss people off. You say the wrong thing, and people do fire up. My argument to that was always, well, turn off. You don't have to listen to it if you don't like it. Something like this with Twitter in a tragedy, it'd be like coming straight out after 9/11, and making a joke about that, you know.
Mundane.
Some sort of joke about, you know, the Jews run America as far as finances go. We know that. New York's full of Jews. So if someone had come out and done something like that the minute, you know, after 9/11 happened, you would have been shouted down. Mm. One of my favorite comedians is a bloke called Anthony Jeselnik. He is disgusting. He does dark, feral, dirty humor. I see it for what it is. It's a guy trying to get a rise out of people, and he's making jokes about taboo subjects, and I find that funny. I wouldn't go out and do those jokes myself, but that's his shtick. That's what he's doing. But this guy missed the mark. Time sensitive is what it's all about. And as you said, Benny, you know, good comedy is tragedy and timing. And his timing was completely off.
Don't you think as well, Scotty, that when you're a comedian and you're putting up your comedic acts, for example, you are doing it in front of an audience. It's also a closed environment where people are there to listen. They know a bit about what you, they've paid to come and watch
correct,
you. They know what
correct.
They're in for.
Yeah.
Social media is a not, platform that I think people are just not careful enough with these days. Yeah. Because the thing that got to me the most was, is I saw the two sides going at each other. From the people applauding him, like, oh, don't listen to these silly wogs.
Yeah,
they're just
having
a cry about, you know, their stupid diving sport and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And, oh, they're picking up the pieces after their dives and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Right? So you've got that, let me say, traditional, what would you call it?
The stereotype of soccer fan.
And then you've got the Anglo-Saxon stereotype on the other side, applauding it to the other side, going, have some respect in a tragedy.
Yep.
And then I saw all sorts of things coming out today. I didn't see anyone, you know, joking about Phil Hughes when he passed away. I didn't see anyone joking about all the, you know, when the Sri Lankan terrorist attack happened, when the Sri Lankan cricket team got shot.
No,
I didn't see anything.
This guy fucked up. He fucked up big time.
So I've really thought about this today and delivery of this, but that was the message I wanted to make, is that just poor timing, son. You know, you haven't really apologized. You've got a rise out of people, but you're inciting hatred. The stuff I've seen on social media is vile out there today.
Like, but that's social media for you. And the same can be said to, you know, what's the old argument with YouTube? If you scroll further enough down the comments of any YouTube video, you'll find some guy saying Hitler wasn't that bad. That's the joke, because everyone now in the world has a voice. Social media is fantastic for certain things. Yeah. It's fantastic for business. It's fantastic for staying in touch. It can be fantastic in times of trouble, like the Christchurch earthquake. People over there going, I'm okay. Facebook let them tag themselves to say they're okay. But it also provides voices to people that are ignorant, and they get a platform. And that back in the day, you wouldn't have heard from them.
Scotty, why do these people then have... I just don't understand why they feel they have the right to be so anonymous in what they say, yet so unregistered and so filtered in what they say.
Yeah.
Like, it's just back in the day.
Because there's no repercussions.
There's no repercussions, although people are now starting to get sued. I know Margaret Reed from ACT Soccer here. She just won $183,000 after she was defamed on Facebook 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So she ran Capital Football, and this guy said she was useless and rubbish, and they gave him cease and desist letters, and he just kept hammering her. And she won $180,000 this week.
Yeah,
so you can be nailed for what you say on social media, and it is happening, and it's going to happen so much more into
back
the future.
Let me just say this. Back in the day, 10, 15 years ago, we had none of this. Social media, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. Let me give you the example. You're on the radio. You're one of the most well-known guys in this. You still are in this whole town, right? We knew who you were, but you had a responsibility which you had to stand up for, because everybody knew that. There was no one else around that to just come out. People wanted to slag you off. I'm sure they did.
Oh.
People that would slag all of us off. No dramas. They do it in their own backyards. They do it in private. Why do you need your vitriol to come out for people to see, for kids to see, for people who don't deserve it, to abuse the dead like that?
His moral compass is just way off, and he was going to try and get a rise out of people, and he didn't realize how quick it was going to backfire.
I think that was a great point that you both made earlier. Okay, I'm not justifying what he said by any stretch of the imagination, but if he said that at a show that, his show, people paid to come and see.
Did a comedy show.
Not saying it's funny at all, but that is very different to announce it on social media for the whole world to see, including the victims' families.
Correct.
And I'm not even saying any of them are fine at all.
Especially with hashtags now. Like, you can be anywhere in the world and you do a hashtag on a topic that everyone's talking about. That tweet is visible to everyone in the world.
Especially
not just the people that follow you.
Yeah.
Right. So that's because I've a lot of people are talking, what do hashtags do? That's what hashtags do. They group everything in the subject that it's spoken about. But Stevie, I can hear your passion in it, mate, and I know you're obviously a very passionate soccer supporter, and it's a tragedy, and this guy stuffed up.
Mate,
so Benny,
boys, I'm a passionate sports supporter.
Correct.
Thank you, Benny. Yeah. But mate, come on.
Yeah.
Just give it some time, or go and crank it in your show in 2-3 weeks' time.
I don't think he's got the profile to be doing shows, has he? the guy ever done a comedy
I don't
show?
Think so. No.
Anyone can say they're a comedian. No, not at all.
Like you said,
he's a fucking joke, but he's not a comedian.
There you go.
Hey, like you said, mate, people will joke about Holocaust now, about Hitler, about all
they
that
do.
Sort of stuff.
They
but,
do.
But,
you know,
if you're joking about 9/11 on 10/11, you're a fucking dickhead.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's no other way to put it. Benny, wrap it up with an uppercut because this dickhead deserves one.
I'm ready.
All right, folks, there you go. A little bit of a serious note to end tonight on. Final show next week. So spread the word, share this around, let everyone know you download
things are getting
it,
deep on this
fan.
Show, man. It's like the last season of Breaking Bad that I will return to you. things are going deep, man. I like this, man. We're growing up, man.
Yeah. Oh, man, we've come a long way in 28 episodes. This I'll give you the, you go back and listen to episode one now, and it's a cringe fest.
Hi, my name Ben. can we start? Is this live?
And on that, folks, I'm going to say get a big black dog up you.
What's your sign off line, Steve-O?
Not yet. Let me come up.
You'll come up with
that's
one
a good
next
one.
Year.
See you, folks.
Well, that's a wrap. Not sure if we solved the problems of the world, but if we didn't, Ben can put those problems to sleep with a well-timed ride. And Scotty can write a scathing diatribe and give them another tongue-lashing in the next episode of the Give Yourself an Uppercut podcast. Hey, at least they played some kick-ass music, right? This podcast couldn't be made possible without our sponsors, Lang's Auto Centre in Queanbeyan and The Butcher Shop, Dixon and Kayleen. Until next time.